This is The Guardian.
Looking for your next great podcast? We live in unprecedented times. To make sense of it, what if you could learn from some of the most influential people on the planet? The podcast Tools and Weapons is hosted by Microsoft's Vice Chair and President Brad Smith. Every week, he has a candid conversation with guests, including prime ministers and Pulitzer Prize-winning journalists. The latest episode features Bayer CEO Bill Anderson. Though most of us know Bayer for pharmaceuticals, they're also focused on crop science. They're putting digital tools in the hands of farmers to get the most out of every acre. Listen to Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith, wherever you get your podcasts.
Science Weekly is supported by Rainforest Trust. In honor of this year's Earth Day, we're promoting Rainforest Trust's Brazilian Amazon Fund throughout April. Rainforest Trust is a 501c3 organization, which means that 100% of all money donated goes directly to conservation efforts. The fund has already helped protect more than 6.5 million acres of rainforest habitat, but Rainforest Trust still needs to protect a further 13 million acres to reach its goal. You can help. Donate online at rainforesttrust.org/earthday this April, and your generous gift will be quadruple matched for the Brazilian Amazon.
They're found in the blood of people in Oatman, Arizona, and they are found in the blood of people in Fargo, Dakota. They are found in me. They are found in my kids. They are found in every one of you.
That's actor and environmental campaigner Mark Ruffalo talking to US politicians about PFAS, aka forever chemicals. So called because once an environment is contaminated with them, they stick around for a long, long time, building up and up. They've been found pretty much everywhere, in the environment, in animals, and even in our blood. But a new investigation has revealed the scale of the pollution in the UK and Europe, and discovered high levels of forever chemicals at thousands of sites. So what are PFAS? How toxic are they? And what can we do to protect ourselves, to reduce their impact, or just to avoid them completely? From The Guardian, I'm Madeleine Finlay, and this is Science Weekly. Rachel Salvage, you're an environmental journalist and founder of Watershed, an investigative organisation focusing on water issues. And you've just published an investigation in The Guardian about PFAS, so-called forever chemicals. So to start us off, what exactly are PFAS?
PFAS, it stands for per- and polyfluoroalkyl substances. So I'm quite pleased that we have a shorthand for it. But it's an umbrella term for a family of thousands of chemicals. So around 10,000, or I've actually seen a study saying that there might be around 12,000 on the market at the moment. And they're prized for their indestructible non-stick properties. So if something is greaseproof or waterproof, it's likely that there is a PFAS doing that job in that product. It was originally the Teflon chemical. That's how you had your non-stick pan, but you can get it in waterproof clothing. It's in carpets and furniture. And then it's in firefighting foams, which are a little bit different, and lots of industrial processes. And that means they're leaching out into the environment in many, many different ways.
And PFAS are called forever chemicals because once they're in the environment, they hang about, right?
This is their property. They're called forever chemicals, as you say, because of that, because the scientific term is they're persistent, and essentially they won't break down ever. Or, you know, maybe if they do, it's going to be in tens and tens of thousands of years. So the fact that we've got a big load out there in the environment already, but we're continually adding to it and it doesn't go away. So the problem is getting bigger and bigger every day. And it's very difficult for public interest science to then pick one of those chemicals and then prove that it's creating harm, because that's a really difficult thing to do. So for two of these chemicals, two of the 10 to 12,000, PFOS and PFOA, there's been lots of study on those two, and it has been found that they are harmful, and as a result, they've been banned or restricted. But to imagine that they can do that for the 10 to 12,000 PFAS is, I mean, that's just not going to happen in anyone's lifetime. So there is a move out there to regulate the entire class of chemicals as one. The EU would like to do that. There's a proposal for that. But in the UK, we're rather further behind.
So when you say these chemicals are harmful, are you talking about the impact that they have on us, our health?
Yes, definitely. So PFOA has been linked to six diseases. So that is high cholesterol, ulcerative colitis, thyroid disease, testicular cancer, kidney cancer, and pregnancy-induced hypertension. PFOS as well, that's been linked to problems with the immune system. I think they've both been linked to low birth weight, a range of birth defects. One study has showed that, it's a Danish study, it came out in 2022, has found that exposure to PFASs during early pregnancy, that means that the child later on in life could have a lower sperm count. So there are concerns because they can, you know, disrupt hormones and development.
Gosh, I mean, the fact that they have such a big impact on our health, do we know anything about the effect that they have on the environment?
They move around in the environment. We've seen that they are in high levels in soils and water and even in the air, because they can be airborne too. And they sort of biomagnify up the food chain. So if you're higher up the food chain, when you eat your prey, you're going to get a really heavy dose. And I think Cardiff University, for example, they've done some studies with otters, and they found that at high levels within the otters that they really shouldn't be there. It's not clear the impacts that they're having, but it's in these animals at high levels, and it just shouldn't be there.
This takes us on to your investigation. Together with your watershed colleague, Liana Hosea, and following on from the work of a number of European organisations, you got information from companies and environment agencies like the Centre for Environment, Fisheries and Aquaculture Science, CFAS, to create a map of where PFAS had been found across the UK and Europe. And listeners, you can find this map on theguardian.com if you want to take a look. But Rachel, how did you begin to look at this?
First of all, we're looking at the individual data sets and looking at what the water companies had found in the drinking water sources, what the Environment Agency was finding in groundwater and rivers, what CFAS was finding in fish and sediments, and collated all that together to see what we could actually, you know, if we could build this map and build a picture of the contamination in the UK and obviously more broadly in Europe. The problem with this is, if you look at the map and you see an area that doesn't have many dots on it, there aren't any samples showing PFAS, it doesn't mean it's not there. It just means that the organisations haven't sampled that area. Or it may mean that. I mean, there are clean areas, obviously, but I just wouldn't like people to look at the map and think, well, there are lots of dots there, so this is really contaminated, and none there, so it's not. Often it's just because that's where the agencies or the water companies have been sampling, and that's where there's data. In all, I think across the UK and Europe, there are 17,000 sites where sampling had picked up more than 10 nanograms per litre of PFAS in the water or soils, and then 1,000 or so that had around 1,000 nanograms per litre or more. But to kind of put that in context, in drinking water in the UK, the Drinking Water Inspectorate says that anything above 100 nanograms per litre, if that is found in a drinking water source, then the water companies must immediately do something to reduce that. In the EU, their standards are much lower. For example, Denmark, their drinking water standard is 2 nanograms per litre for the sum total of 4 PFASs, but a lot lower than our 100 nanograms per litre.
Okay, so you found about 1,000 sites where the levels were way, way above what would be allowable for drinking water. And actually, 300 of them, it was at concentrations of 10,000 nanograms per litre or more. So these numbers are pretty shocking. What conclusions should we be drawing from this?
I think there are a couple of takeaways. One of them is that we're not really monitoring very much. In the last year or so, the Environment Agency, they've really picked up, and so for the water companies, they've started to do a lot more testing, but it's only in the last year or 2 years. So I think our understanding of the contamination in this country is really, really limited. Looking at the data itself, there are some quite unpleasant thing. So the sediments in the River Thames, they had very high levels of PFAS in them. There were flounder in the River Wyre in the northwest above Blackpool that had PFAS up to 11,000 nanograms per kilogram, which is really very high. And as I say, the PFAS can leach down into groundwater, and often that's used as drinking water sources, which can be a problem. But water companies say, well, that water would never reach your taps at high levels because we blend it with a different source, or because we have a special treatment process in place to remove enough of it so you get a much lower dose. But there are also groundwater sources that aren't used for drinking water, but it might be used for livestock, or it might be used for spraying crops. And it's just a big problem, therefore, then for farming, because you can get into the food chain that way. We also spoke to Ian Cousins, who's a scientist at Stockholm University, and he was saying that anything with readings above 1,000 nanograms per litre should really be very urgently assessed, and that local authorities should do more testing, and they should check out the local produce to determine if the health advisories would be needed to say, don't consume the fish, the shellfish, the free-range eggs, etc.
You mentioned the River Wyre, which is near Blackpool. And in the UK, this is where the highest levels were found in discharge from a chemical plant. So tell me about that site and what exactly was found there.
We tested the discharge coming from the site where the chemicals factory sits. And we found really high levels of PFOA, at 12,000 nanograms per litre. And as I mentioned before, this is the one that's linked to those diseases. The company says that they don't manufacture PFOA and it could be a legacy issue. But I think just the problem is, you know, regardless of where it's coming from or how it's happening, there are high concentrations of this banned chemical making its way into the Wyre, and you just wouldn't want it to be in there.
Is there any way that these chemicals can be removed from the environment?
There are processes in place where, if it's in the wastewater treatment process and water companies have something called granular activated carbon as part of their process, then they can remove some PFASs. But I was talking to one scientist and they're saying, well, they don't know that they can remove all PFASs. Maybe that's in place and that will get rid of the two problematic ones that we know about. But there are lots of PFASs whose molecules are slightly different who could probably get through. And then once you've treated that water, you end up with waste, and that waste is full of PFAS, so you then have to dispose of that in some way. I think there are some sort of very, very technical treatment processes that can do it, but I think it's very expensive. But if you had it in groundwater, just polluting an aquifer, I have no idea how you would go about trying to fix that.
So it sounds like what we need to do is stop this pollution from entering our waterways in the first place. How do you see that happening?
I think the only way that can happen is through regulation. There is some hope. Some companies have decided just to phase it out anyway. And I think a while ago, McDonald's said they would remove it from their food packaging. If you can believe it's in food packaging, it's in lots of food packaging. But also 3M, which is one of the biggest producers, made an announcement recently to say that they're planning to exit the PFAS market altogether and to phase out use in their supply chains. So this is how it happens. I mean, when big companies decide to take the lead, I mean, apart from companies volunteering to do it under a little bit of duress, it's about regulation. It's about saying, you know, you can't use these PFASs unless you can prove that they're not going to be harmful, or just find an alternative, unless it's utterly essential that you have to use it, say, for example, in medical processes or something like that, and then strictly controlled. It can't be a cleanup issue. It can't be about cleaning everything up. It has to be about stopping it happening in the first place. Although we have to clean it up because it's here and it's not going anywhere.
Rachel, to me, it feels like it's this invisible issue that at some point down the line, if we don't do something now, like regulate, we're really going to be hit with it when we actually understand the effects of these chemicals better and once they've continued to build up. But having investigated this for a while, are there things that consumers could do to avoid these chemicals in the meantime, or are they just too widespread?
That's a question that I've been asking myself, because it's not a great job just to be telling people that, you know, there's a really bad problem out there and there's not a great deal you can do about it. I would like to avoid PFAS, but I don't know how to do that. I would think twice if I was buying something, you know, waterproof or non-stick, and I would wonder, has that got PFAS in it? I mean, if, for example, if you're getting furniture, that's a lot of furniture has got it in. If something is sort of stain-proof, you think, oh, great, I'll get that carpet because I've got kids, and if it's stain-proof and I can just wipe it off, well, that's probably because it's got PFAS in it, so maybe don't get that carpet, get one that maybe might stain. There is very little advice, unfortunately, that I can give, apart from, you know, if people want to talk to their MPs about how they would prefer better regulation, that could be something that people could do.
Well, Rachel, it's been fascinating and terrifying in equal measure. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks again to Rachel Salvage. And you can read all of the coverage of this investigation at theguardian.com. And that's it for today. The producer was me, Madeline Finley. The sound design was by Joel Cox. And the executive producer was Ellie Bury. We'll be back on Thursday. See you then.
Looking for your next great podcast? We live in unprecedented times. To make sense of it, what if you could learn from some of the most influential people on the planet? The podcast Tools and Weapons is hosted by Microsoft's Vice Chair and President Brad Smith. Every week, he has a candid conversation with guests, including prime ministers and Pulitzer Prize-winning journalists. The latest episode features Bayer CEO Bill Anderson. Though most of us know Bayer for pharmaceuticals, they're also focused on crop science. They're putting digital tools in the hands of farmers to get the most out of every acre. Listen to Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith, wherever you get your podcasts.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.